I always like to call a conversation an alchemy between two people. It's this sort of magic that can only happen with two people. It can't just be one person asking questions, the other person answering. It's got to, everyone's got to kind of do their thing to make something special or a oneness of it. Manali, you know this. You're not going to listen to something attentively if you're not curious.
Not you even interested. Like, interest and
no.
curious.
Yeah. And so I love to take that mindset to when I do a podcast or when I have a conversation with somebody. It's like that moment, that day, that thing is the most important thing that's happening right now. And if you have that mindset, it will activate all these other things we've been talking about. The body language, the curiosity, the listening. I hear a disembodied voice from the other side of the room. And it was Taylor Swift saying, well, somebody woke up feeling saucy this morning and the room went dead quiet. You ever catch yourself, Manali, having a conversation with someone doing a podcast and you feel like you're not being super tuned? Maybe you're not listening as carefully. Maybe you're just not really into it. Just say, you know, just crank that knob up to an 11.
Hi, and welcome to the channel. I am Manali. I'm a podcast producer, and I am here with someone who has been a radio personality and producer on the NYC radio station 95.5 WPLJ, Joey Pardivila. Joey was part of the iconic Scott and Todd in the Morning and has produced over 10,000 hours of audio content over the course of his career. Joey joins me to share how right communication can create magic moments while the wrong ones can derail the entire conversation, just like his conversation with Taylor Swift. He has also written a book called Good Listen, which you as a podcaster or an aspiring podcaster or somebody in people business must read to master their interpersonal skills. Let's see what Joey has to say about keeping calm while chatting with high-profile guests from Hollywood.
Yeah, I think the one thing when it comes to interviewing people that have a higher status, and because I think that's the word that we should always key on. The folks have a higher status, but at the end of the day, they're all the same person, Manali. One thing I was able to sort of capture early on in my career, because I started in New York City where, you know, there's always either a celebrity or a high profile individual appearing doing media, that after a while, it sort of the of it kind of fades away. And then you just realize at the end of the day, as a host or a broadcaster, you are the avatar for the audience. So if you are so like gaga and can't speak, the audience gets nothing out of it. The audience will just hear someone blabbering about so nervously speaking to somebody else and feeling like inferior. But when you're having conversations with someone who has a bit of a higher status, who's more known, it's important to make sure that they feel and you feel like you're on the same level. Because that's the only way you get these exchange of ideas. Because I always like when folks use the word conversation as opposed to interview, because I feel the word interview has this connotation of question, answer, question, answer, question, answer. And to me, as a consumer of any kind of media, whether it's a podcast, video, I always like it when the host and the guest have interactions in a way that they're having a conversation like normal day, not just someone reading off a list of questions, not someone just giving the same patented answers. So it's important when you're having a chat, whether it's on a podcast or whether it's in person with an individual who's slightly more famous than you, has more Instagram followers than you, that it's important to maintain that level of you both being on the same playing field.
Also, I think it takes a little bit of practice as well and getting accustomed Absolutely. To talking to people of, you know, somebody who's level 3, level 4 above you.
Yeah, but you know what's important, Manali? Mm-hmm. So what I did was, as you mentioned, I've done 10,000 hours of audio. Most of it was in terrestrial radio in New York. It was a pop music station. So it was a lot of like musical celebrities, actors, entertainers. And then I transitioned into podcasting where I interview business individuals like CEOs, entrepreneurs, thought leaders in the business space. And when I made the switch, I was like, what am I going to say to these people?
Exactly.
I don't know anything about ROIs. I don't know anything about
fancy
all
tools.
The acronyms that people use, all these fancy things that people, I don't know. And so I almost had a moment of like, you know, they call it imposter syndrome of like, what can I possibly say to these people? But what I soon realized, Manali, was they're all the same. And I'm going to use a curse word, American curse word here. It's like, it's all the same shit. Like literally like having conversations with someone who's either on the stage singing or someone who runs a company with 10,000 employees, it really is all the same. You're just that avatar that I mentioned earlier. You're just there to help people tell their story.
Amazing. So what was your first interaction like? Like, were you nervous? How old were you? Did someone guide you? Were there any like, do this, don't do this, and you were pressurized? Yeah. Who was it also?
So when I was in college, I knew I wanted to be in the world of media. I didn't know what I wanted to be. When I was a little kid, I wanted to be a TV talk show host. But I didn't know how to do that. I didn't have a family that was connected to Hollywood or show business. My family were immigrants. My mother was a Cuban refugee. My father was a sailor from Spain. So it's not like I had an in anywhere. So what I did was I signed up for an internship at a radio station in New York. And that was my school. Like, I learned how to be a radio professional by just being there and being surrounded by people who were like incredibly talented. The two gentlemen that I ended up being the executive producer for, Scott and Todd, one of them is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The other is a massively talented host who's worked for the WWE and WWF. So to me, I think it's important is having that mentorship piece. So I was able to see what these great people did. And I was also able to see what I didn't like what they did. And I was like, hey, I know who I am, but I know I'll need to pick up these things along the way. So during this time when I'm producing the morning show, it's like, it was just celebrity after celebrity walking through the door. And the one thing that was, I guess, important for me, since I was like this young kid, I was 20 years old when I was my first paying job. And the one thing I wanted to do was not show how scared or sort of impressed I was by celebrities, because these hosts that I was working for, they'd seen it all. They've done it all. So if a celebrity walked in, whether it was a Paul McCartney or was a Russell Crowe, I couldn't be like, oh my God, it's so amazing. I can't believe they're here. Oh, you know, so I just had to play it cool. Mm. And I think that sort of helped me kind of calm down that nervousness of, you know, not being so in awe of someone, because if I was, my bosses or my mentors would be like, dude, calm down. It's no big deal. So I think that's what sort of helped me ease into that and not be sort of in awe of celebrities. You mentioned the Jennifer Aniston story. Mm-hmm. So early on in my career, I was working in the morning show, and we got a phone call from one of our listeners saying, hey, Jennifer Aniston is right outside your building filming. So our radio station was located in Midtown Manhattan, right in the center of the city. And this caller had seen the trailer parked right outside of our building. So my host, Scott and Todd, said, hey, why don't you go down there and see if you can interview Jennifer Aniston? And I'm like, yeah, sure. At this point, she was like at the height of her friend's fame. She was just starting her film career. So I get down there and there's a trailer parked on the street. And for some reason, there was not a soul around, but just one security guard sort of mingling about. So I'm like, all right, here's my chance. All I got to do is just walk up to that door. It's not like there was like huge fencing or like a legion of heavy duty security guards. There's just one guy floating around. So I go to walk over to the door, and the very large gentleman says, what do you think you're doing? And I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I just wanted to go talk to Jennifer Aniston. I'm from WPLJ. And he's like, no, you're not. I'm like, oh no, it's no big deal. I'm from the WPLJ radio station. And he was like, get out of here. You're not talking to her. So I walk away, I call up to the radio station, I say, hey, listen, it doesn't look like it's going to go anywhere here. And they go, I'll give it another try. I'm like, all right. So I go back over, and here I go. The guy kind of wanders away again, and I sneak over to the door, and he goes, where do you think you're going? And I'm like, it's no big deal, I'm WPLJ, I'm here to talk to Jennifer Aniston. He's like, no, you are not. Meanwhile, I see a door open behind him, and Jennifer Aniston pokes her head out. She wants to see what the ruckus is all about. Because I'm telling you, Manali, this is early in the morning in New York City. It's dead quiet. I'm the only person making any noise at this point. And she's like, is everything okay out there? I'm like, oh, it's no big deal. I'm WPLJ. I want to see if we can get an interview. And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I think I have to go on the set in a few minutes. I really can't do any interviews right now. I was like, oh, okay. Well, thank you very much. So dejectedly, I walk back up to the studio, tail between my legs, saying, I'm sorry I couldn't get Jennifer Aniston. And then all of a sudden, the receptionist calls to the studio, who answers the phones at the front desk. And she says, there's someone who says they're Jennifer Aniston's assistant, and they want Jennifer Aniston to call in so she can apologize for what just happened. So Jennifer Aniston then calls into our studio. We have this like half-hour conversation with her. She couldn't be any nicer, apologized for the whole run-in with the bodyguard. And it was just this moment of me realizing, if I could just have a little bit of fearlessness, Just a little bit. Not to the point where I would like cause bodily harm, but just a little bit of fearlessness. Be a little bit of a daredevil. That's what opened that up, that opportunity to have Jennifer Aniston. Because had I been like, oh no, guys, I'm never going to get past a security guard. The security guard's going to kick my ass. Like, what am I going to do? But I was just bold and brave and maybe just stupid enough as a young professional to give it a crack. So that's the reason I like to tell that story, Manali, is just none of that ever happens if I just don't go for it. And I think that sometimes slows people down. A lot of times people get in their own heads. They overthink things. And me, luckily being young and a little bit naive, just brave enough. Because trust me, this is not part of my brand, Manali. I'm not the brave daredevil. I don't do, you know, skydiving. I don't do anything that's too crazy that could hurt myself. But for me to do this really just opened myself up to the point that if you can just take a risk, you know, a calculated risk, you can magical things can happen in your career.
Makes sense. And so, like, she went out of her way and, you know, got back to you, apologized, and even had a 30-minute conversation. So, for somebody who's, you know, getting started, but they're not comfortable talking, how do you calm them down and, you know, make them feel comfortable with you and make them open up?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. And if you want, I could share my Taylor Swift story.
Sure.
Are you familiar with Taylor Swift?
Yeah.
So a few years ago, Taylor Swift was coming to our radio studio to promote her latest album. I think this might have been like 1989, around that time. The album, not 1989, not the year. So she comes in, and before the interview, her publicity team said, hey, listen, you're able to video record the interview, but only 5 minutes of it. And I'm like, oh, okay, fine, we'll post 5 minutes of the interview. And they're like, No. You're only able to record 5 minutes and then you have to stop.
Oh.
And I was like, well, that's weird, because as you know, Manali, the first few minutes of any interview is sort of like very light banter. Yeah. It's not very impactful. It's just kind of soft and squishy. There's nothing there. So I was annoyed. And for whatever reason, it annoyed me to the point that when the publicist walked in with Taylor Swift, she does a beeline straight to the videographer who's standing a few feet away from me and says, hey, just a reminder, when I tap you on the shoulder, you have to drop your camera. They didn't even trust us to turn the camera off. Like, you had to literally drop the camera. I'm like, and at that point, I was just so annoyed, Manali, that I said, oh, just a quick question to the publicist now. Taylor Swift's on the other side of the room. She's getting situated. I go, oh, just a quick question. If we get to the point at the 5 minute mark and we have a follow up question, is it okay if we keep recording? And she's like, yeah, I guess so. It's, you know, it's not really a hard five. And I'm like, okay, great. And I said, what if we have a follow-up question to that first follow-up question? Would we be able to keep recording? And at this point, she's kind of confused. She's like, yeah, I guess so. And I'm not one to leave well enough alone, Manali. So I said, well, what if we had a third follow-up question that connected to the second follow-up question that was on the first follow-up question that connected to that interview that was in the first 5 minutes? And at that point, I hear a disembodied voice from the other side of the room, and it was Taylor Swift saying, well, somebody woke up feeling saucy this morning, and the room went dead quiet. Everyone's like, what the hell just happened? So we all kind of just gather our thoughts. We get ready. We start to do what you do before the podcast, Manali. Do a quick little meditation. And then we start the conversation, and she could not be any more disenchanted, more disinterested in the conversation. She was giving stock answers. She didn't feel comfortable. She's like, who is this jerk who's being a dick to my publicist? Is he going to ask me a question that I'm going to find offensive? Is this going to be an uncomfortable situation? And the reason I like to tell this story, Manali, is because I put my ego in front of the guest, and I put something as minor and inconsequential as video recording a conversation above actually just having the conversation. I didn't make Taylor Swift feel comfortable in that situation. She walked in and her guard went immediately up. Now, Taylor Swift has given 10,000, hundreds of thousands of interviews, and she's genuinely a really good interview, has great answers to tell. But when she's not comfortable, she's like, okay, I'm going to retreat into my, here's the same basic answers I've given 100 times. I'm just going to wrap this up. I want to get out of here without any kind of embarrassment, any feeling like crap at the end of it. So the interview ended up being terrible. And it was just because I put my own ego in front of the actual, at the end of the day, what you're trying to do is create a conversation. So going back to your questions, Manali, it's really about making sure that whatever you do, with that person that's on your podcast, or extrapolate this out to a business meeting or a meeting with a family member. You have to make them feel so comfortable. And I use this analogy. You know how sometimes when someone goes over to your house, they'll ask you if they could get something from your refrigerator? Well, you want that person, your guest, to be so comfortable, they will go into your refrigerator without asking. They will take your last beer without asking. That's the comfort level you want any guest to be when they appear on a podcast with you, whether it's on a show like this, whether it's just the interaction you're having with a boss at work. You want them to feel comfortable. So whatever that means, so it means being super polite. Energy is super important. I disarm a lot of folks usually with my enthusiasm because whenever I do any kind of podcast, whether I'm a guest or I'm a host, I'm excited. Mm-hmm. I love talking. I love having the opportunity to talk with people. So enthusiasm, energy, body language, there's so many little things, but the first thing that you have to do, the first step is make sure that that person is comfortable in that space.
Exactly. So like you mentioned, body language, you know, there's this thing, some people, they are very excited and the others are like, they're calm by nature, they are calm. And when you go in for an interview and you are excited, but the person sitting right across is a calm person and very chilled out. So how do you firstly understand like the body language of the other person, especially in such online setup? And secondly, how do you match it?
Yeah, one of the things, and you just use the word, I'm going to use match, but I'm going to say mirror. One of the things that human beings are very known to do, and this is like going back to like the apes, is mirroring each other. And I feel like if you are an enthusiastic person and the person you're speaking to is more, like you said, chill or calm, more likely than not, that person's energy will rise. Because nothing rises someone else's energy than someone else. Like if you come, if the shoe's on the other foot and it's reversed where you're calm and the other person's high energy, you will then match that person. So it's always about, you know, when I was speaking about environment, it's like really matching that. And I think people do that inherently. Like I don't even think people think about it. So if you are an enthusiastic person, that will rub off on people. If that person is just so low-key, maybe smokes way too much marijuana, they'll never match your energy. But more times than not, they will. So if you're enthusiastic naturally, and I'm not saying put on a show or be a fake person. If you're normally enthusiastic and the other person is not, there's a pretty good chance that that person's energy level will rise just because of their experience with you. So if that's your vibe, like if you are just a really fun person, you don't ever feel like you have to tone yourself down, because that's not you. That's not on you. On you is being yourself. And if the other person doesn't match it, like it is what it is. But I will tell you, more times than not, if you're enthusiastic and passionate about a conversation, that other person, whether they're super chill or just woke up on the wrong side of the bed, they will raise their energy just because they're surrounded by you.
Wow. Okay. Because in my mind, how I used to see this is, to make someone feel comfortable, you need to mirror, like you said, the kind of energy they are in. So I was thinking, if this is how it works, and then it's just conflicting to maybe who I am, then how does this work in reality? So there was a little confusion there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, Manali, it's a perfectly good question to ask, because I think it's one of the things where it's like human interaction is just so weird. There's so many different ways to give off vibe, whether it's your voice, whether it's your smile, whether it's your eyes, your body language, what have you. But what I always tell folks is, when you're a host or someone who's trying to like steer a conversation, I use this example in the book of Be Yourself at 11. And this analogy comes from the movie Spinal Tap. So this movie's way too old for you, Manali, but there was a rock mockumentary. It's about this fake band in the 70s. And they were like a very typical, almost stereotypical rock and roll heavy metal band from the 70s. And they played it up. And one of the members of the band, the guitar player, had an amp. And as you know, with amps, they go up to 10. And so the joke in this scene was that his amp is so much louder, his goes to an 11. And so I like to tell people, when you are in any role where you're hosting a podcast, whether you're giving a talk to people, you have to be yourself, but at an 11. And that doesn't mean louder. It doesn't have to be more dramatic. It really has to be your most self. So if you're like slightly enthusiastic in normal times when you're a host or doing or, you know, guiding a conversation, you're just a little more enthusiastic. If you have trouble sort of enunciating words when you speak normally, like you kind of just like slur, when you're hosting, you're slightly more enunciate those words. So it's really just a mindset of just being your very best self. And again, going back to what we're talking about, like not being someone else, I'm not saying be someone else. I'm saying be yourself, but be like your most self. And you won't know that until you start to do it. But if you ever catch yourself, Manali, having a conversation with someone doing a podcast and you feel like you're not being super tuned, maybe you're not listening as carefully, maybe you're just not really into it, just say, you know, just crank that knob up to an 11 and see what happens.
Wow. Okay, so you wrote this book, Good Listen, in, mm-hmm. and it's for improving conversations. So
yes,
what are the like top three or maybe five things you wish or want listeners to, readers to take away from your book?
Yeah, I mean, I will say that when I wrote the book was I didn't want to do a how to be a podcaster book, mm-hmm. but I felt that the skills that require you to be a good podcaster will help you be a better human. So that's why I wanted to be, I think the subtitle of the book is how to create better conversations in business and in life. So I didn't want it to just be like, oh, here's this book just for people who want to be podcasts. The skills and tricks and stories that I share will help you if you're a podcaster or a broadcaster, but I think they'll also help you as a human being. And so one of my big takeaways was, and the reason it's called Good Listen is that, and I know at this point there's probably so many things written about active listening and listening, but what I want people to take away from it is the importance of curiosity in listening.
Mm-hmm.
Manali, you know this. You're not going to listen to something attentively if you're not curious.
Not even interested. It's like, interest and
no.
curious.
Yeah. If you're not curious about something, like people always say, like, how can I become a better listener? I'm like, you've got to be more curious, mm-hmm. because you can't have one without the other. You can't just all of a sudden magically be like, I'm an amazing listener. Mm-hmm. You can't, because you need that curiosity piece to sort of really fine tune it and make it so like very much on point that you want to know, and your body and your brain and your soul will not allow you to not listen because you're so curious and in that moment that you will become a better listener. So when people say, how do I become a better listener? I always say, just be curious. Because if you're curious, you will be a better listener. It just, you can't do without. It's like, if you're curious, there's no way you can't be a good listener. Like you have to be, because once that curiosity muscle kicks in, you'll just be so engaged. You're like, okay, cool. Give me more. And then you'll have, oh, okay, I have more questions for you. So that was sort of like the big thing that I wanted to impart in the book. And so I use a lot of the stories that I've had. And the reason I mentioned celebrities in the book is really more just to share what I learned from those interactions. You know, the Taylor Swift story, the Jennifer Aniston story. Those, I learned from things, from those moments. And I think that's what I want people to take away from the book. What I learned, and I think could help you either be a better podcaster or just be a better human interacting with others.
Cool. And you've also had experience you have a background in comedy and improv. Mm. So how has it influenced your interviewing style?
Yeah, absolutely. And if I always tell people, if you live in a city that offers improvisation coaching, whether it's like an improv class, long form, short form, take it. And I say this to anyone, whether you're a podcast host or you're just a regular person on the street having a regular job. Long-form improvisation, which I learned in New York City, is a very popular form of comedy that was born and bred sort of like in the 1970s and 80s in Chicago. And basically what long-form improvisation is two or more people in a scene creating something from scratch. And the only way that you can create a scene from scratch on stage in front of people is by being a good listener. And one of the things that they teach you in improv is, if you're not listening to your partner in the scene, your scene partner as it's called, you will not be able to develop something together. Because the basis of long form improv, and you might have heard this phrase before, Manali, is yes and. Yes to what you said and this. Well, you can't say yes to something if you're not listening. Like if you can't add to it if you're not listening. So the improv classes I took were so instrumental in me becoming a better interviewer, because it really just wires you to listen at all times. And sometimes, as any human, I'll sometimes like fade and sometimes forget to listen. And I'll just, I have like this little person inside of me that says, Joe, snap out of it. Start listening again. So, because I've so trained myself to this. And there's this great coach who I had. His name is Anthony Tamanic. And if you Google him, he had a bit part on 30 Rock, and he played Donald Trump in a sketch comedy series on Comedy Central. But before that, he was just this amazing improviser, and he taught me that when you're doing a scene with someone, that scene is the most important moment in that person's life. It's not the day they just went down to the store and got a coffee and got back home. That scene is something impactful. That greatest thing, the worst thing, the biggest thing that happened in that scene. And so I love to take that mindset to when I do a podcast or when I have a conversation with somebody. It's like that moment, that day, that thing is the most important thing that's happening right now. And if you have that mindset, it will activate all these other things we've been talking about, the body language, the curiosity, the listening. If you make those moments so big, they will only make you feel better about yourself, make the person feel better because you're so into the moment.
Totally. So, you know, just getting back to the Taylor Swift story that you shared.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, please, no, no more Taylor Swift. No, I'm kidding.
So if you were to, you know, relive that moment, how could you use humor or maybe improv technique to, you know, calm down and de-escalate the situation and, you know, get her back to her...
First of all, Manali, I would not give two shits about this video. Like, I would not care about it. Who cares who's how much video we're gonna get out of this? Who cares if a few thousand people will watch this video? It doesn't matter. If I had taken that moment as seriously as I've been discussing and making that the biggest moment of the day for me, making it impactful for Taylor to feel like this is important enough for me to be there. If I had done everything that we've just been talking about, you know, for the last 20 minutes, that interview would have been 100x better than it was. And I just didn't do that because I just lost sight of things because I let little things get in the way of what something could be very big.
So you say you should be curious. You should be, you know, not make a big fuss out of the person you're going to converse with. And what else? Are there certain principles from comedy that you believe everyone should, know of and imbibe to make conversations more engaging and enjoyable?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think humor is one of those things. It's a fine line because, you know, some folks.
It's subjective as well.
It's subjective. And also folks sometimes think they're funnier than they are. But I will say, the effort of being humorous, I think, can be endearing. I think, we have this, now everything's like, everything's a dad joke now. Like, oh, that's a dad joke. But it's like the idea of just trying to be humorous can be very endearing to other people. One trick that I always like to use, and I don't really like to call it a trick, but I the way I use my humor when I have a conversation is I try to be as self-deprecating as possible. Like, I always try to, on the surface, be like, yeah, listen, Manali, I'm not very bright. You're the smart person here. Please tell me more about you. Because I think what that does is it sort of...
It puts forward your vulnerable side.
And people dig that. Mm-hmm. And people dig that. And then all of a sudden, I don't want to say they feel sorry for you, but then all of a sudden they're trying to pump you up.
Yeah, because they have empathy. And they're
they're empathetic. They're like, oh, this poor guy, he's got this guy's so tough on himself. I have this funny story, Manali. I went into a pharmacy once, and I'd just taken a shower, and I used to have much longer hair than this, and walked into this pharmacy, get to the counter. I bought some like cold medicine or something, and the guy behind the counter is bald, and he says to me, he goes, "Man, not even my dreams do I have hair like that," and I was like, "Oh, that's nice," and I said, "Well, it's all right, man, because it's my only good quality." As a joke, like this, that all I got's my hair. And the guy felt so bad for me. He goes, "Oh, no, no, I'm sure you have better, more qualities than that." And just that moment of me just cracking that joke instantly, like, brought him down from feeling sorry about his hair to him being like, "Oh, man, it's no, man, you got more than your hair. You're a good guy." And I'm like, "Oh, well, thank you very much." And I know not everyone uses self-deprecation, but I think it's one of the things where you mentioned about humor being subjective. it's when you're crafting humor from yourself, there it's not subjective. It's you. It's like it's your person. And no person is ever going to be like, well, that's not funny. I'm like, it doesn't matter. I'm making fun of myself. And so when you can do that, and not that you have to do it all the time, but I think if you have that sort of tool in your toolbox, it can be incredibly helpful to, again, bring out that empathy in your guests. All of a sudden be like, oh, no, you're not so bad. And I try not to feel, you know, one of the things I want to do is I don't want it to be like I'm faking it, because I really, self-deprecation is part of like who I've always been. I've always kind of made fun of myself, because if you can make fun of yourself, then it allows you to, this is the way I sort of navigate to myself, Manali. If I can make fun of myself, I can make fun of other people, because I'm going to be as tough on myself as I will be to somebody else. So that's just the way I've always been my entire life. Since I was a little kid, I was always like that class clown kind of thing. So I always felt like, hey, listen, if I could make fun of myself, then I could tease you, Manali. I could say, you know, I could bring up something about you and not feel bad, because I'm like, hey, listen, you go ahead. You could bring it on to me. I'm not one of these people that like can tell a joke but can't take it.
Totally. Now this question might sound like super dumb to you maybe, but do you think there are like specific kind of questions that you know, make a person open up and get, you know, juicy stuff from them, which will make the whole conversation interesting?
Yeah, I you know, and just to your original point, there's no such thing as a dumb question. I think if the question comes from a place of good, there's no such thing as a dumb question, because if you are asking a question that is that you feel like you want to ask, I don't think that there's ever a dumb question. I always like to say a couple of, like, when it comes to question tricks, I never like to ask a question that's a yes or no question. Because it ends. It's like, hey, what do you like this? Yes or no? Yes. Okay, cool. If you have a yes or no question, craft it in a way of like, hey, why do you like vanilla ice cream? Or I'm going to try that again. Do you like vanilla ice cream and why? Like if you add an and why or what, that's how you can get around the yes or no question. Because it's very easy for someone who's a guest on or just someone you're speaking to just give it just like a yes or no question. Because in normal life, when you have an interaction with someone at work or you have someone interaction at a store, it's like, hey, can I help you? No. Like, you're not going to say no. You're not going to say, can I help you and why? And like, oh, no, I just don't want to. You know, I don't need your help. So I think keeping it as open-ended as possible. And I also think when it comes, you're talking about getting like that really kind of juicy answer. I think the one thing that, you know, it's something that I always sort of teach and mentor folks about is there's these three words that were up in the radio studio. There was a big white piece of paper, big like 40-point font. It said preparation, concentration, and moderation. And when it comes to any kind of conversation or anything you're doing, moderation is super important. The preparation piece is obvious. You know, be prepared as possible. Concentration, like we've been talking about. Listening, be curious. But the moderation piece, sometimes people forget because they think they've done the first two steps. They're good to go. But the moderation part can almost be as important as the other two, because if you rush into something, asking heavy-hitting questions, asking things that may make someone feel uncomfortable from the jump, will never work. So that's why you always have to ease into interviews, get to know the person, have them open up, do all the steps we've been talking about, make them feel comfortable, whether it's with your energy, with your body language, with the questions you've been asking. All of that will add up into giving you the opportunity to ask those really hard-hitting questions. You can't, the very first question can't be a hard-hitting question, because all of a sudden the person's like on their back foot and then they're defensive. It's like the Taylor Swift situation all over again. They're defensive the entire time. So making sure that you take your time to get to those big questions that you really want to get to. And one thing I always tell people when it comes to preparing for anything, when they're the one asking the questions, is don't ever number your questions. Don't ever feel like you've got to go 1, 2, 3, 4, because conversations don't work in chronological order. They bounce all over the place. So question one may link better to question 7 than it does to question 2. So always have your questions sort of like bulleted, separated out so you can get to them easy. But also, when you have a prearranged conversation with someone, if you have 10 questions prepared and you use 2, That means it was a great conversation. That means that you let the conversation go where which it was supposed to go. I always like to call a conversation an alchemy between two people. It's this sort of magic that can only happen with two people. It can't just be one person asking questions, the other person answering. It's got to, everyone's got to kind of do their thing to make something special or a oneness of it. And also having too many questions, I think, is sometimes a hindrance because all of a sudden your brain's like, oh man, I need to finish. I need to get to all these questions. And I feel like the preparation piece and writing questions sometimes gets conflated. And I think you need to separate those. Write questions, please. But if you prepare enough for someone, read enough, like you stalked my Instagram and my LinkedIn, Manali, if you do enough of that, you don't need to have 50 questions. You're like, oh, I feel like I know Joe enough just from checking out some of his posts, looking at his book, seeing what he talks about on social media, that I know what I'm going to talk to him about. So if you do that, prepared piece is just really not always just writing questions. It's really just getting to know the person before you know the person. So I think that's super important for folks to keep in mind when they're preparing for anything. You know, there is such thing as over preparing. There is such thing as, you know, analysis by paralysis or paralysis by analysis. I always get that wrong. Paralysis by analysis. I always get that one wrong. But I always feel like if you overthink too much beforehand, it will cloud your brain. And so prepare means taking your time, finding out as much as you can about a person, and then have that conversation.
Cool. So conversations are meant to add value and they're also meant to entertain, right? So how do you strike a balance between both of these?
I mean, I think if you're able to inform people in a way that people will learn from things, that's entertaining. Like, entertaining does not always have to mean laughs or cries. It just means if you share something in a certain way, if you educate people on a topic, that to me is entertaining. And I think depending on what you're doing, so in my case, my daily job is podcasts, business podcasts. And so I know that these podcasts don't have to be super humorous, even though I do bring humor to it. I like to have fun with it. They're not super serious interviews.
How do you do that? How do you add humor to serious conversation? I'm wanting to learn this.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's really just always looking at the flip side. Like, always looking at, okay, here's this really, really serious topic. How can I make it funny? And one of the things I like to use is irony. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times, let me see if I give a good example of this. So like, say if I speak to an entrepreneur and they made $10 million last year. Mm-hmm. Instead of me saying, that's cool, you made $10 million, this is the way I would ask the question. I'm like, so making $10 million is that's easy, right? And then the person's like, oh, no, it's not. So using irony in a serious conversation can add humor to it without making a joke out of it. Mm-hmm. Like having that sort of like taking that question and sort of like doing it sideways is just a great way of like, and also disarming people. Because if I say to that person, boy, making $10 million, that sounds easy, right? Mm-hmm. Like that person will immediately be like, whoa, no, it's not. It's not hard. Mm-hmm. It's not easy at all. And then all of a sudden they get into how they made that $10 million. So using little things like that, irony, being just poking fun at yourself, poking fun at the person, be like, well, boy, you really did a great job on that one, didn't you? Like, oh yeah, I screwed up. So that's how you add levity to any kind of conversation. Like, even though I'm interviewing these folks who are deadly serious about what they do, I always just want to have fun doing it because that's the only way I know how to do it. And I think when it gets down to it, Manali, you ask, you know, how do you inject humor in a serious conversation? Mm-hmm. It's really more of a style. It's more of the style choice than anything else. Like if you're as a person want to have a serious conversation with someone without cracking jokes, that's you. That's cool. But if you're a person that likes to have fun with it, it's just really finding yourself in that moment and having fun with it. You can't go into a prepared jokes or things like that. It's just really more of just like living in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like letting your personality shine, be yourself, and then humor will come of it. So, or maybe it won't, like we said, not humor subjective, but if you feel like you have a good sense of humor and you have fun, like you can have a good time and joke around things that could be pretty serious. There was I interviewed this lady and I knew that after about 25 minutes, we had this really fun conversation. And and she was like really type A personality, really funny, great, great person. And I had known that she's been battling cancer. Oh. And she's been very in social media, very much like front facing it. Like she talks about it all the time, post memes about like F cancer, all that stuff. So I was like, how can I ask her about cancer without it really killing the mood of this conversation? So I said, hey, can you confirm or deny this? Is cancer terrible? And she just dropped like laughing. She was like, she laughed so loud, like her mic overmodulated. Like she was like, to be asked about cancer in a manner that was humorous made her feel good. And she opened up and had this really great answer about it. So finding ways to ask questions in a different manner can lead to humor and levity that it could be very helpful in any kind of conversation.
Also, the way someone answers your questions pretty much depends on how you ask it.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. If you ever watch 60 Minutes, the news magazine show that's in the United States, it's also all over the country too. They'll always ask a question that's basically an answer. They'll be like, Manali, you've got brown hair, right? Mm-hmm. And then the person will be like, yeah, I have brown hair. So it's like it sometimes like asking a question with the answer in it is makes it a lot easier. And you'll see like journalists do this all the time. They're like, they'll literally give the person the answer and then the person will then jump off of that because it gives them a starting point. So sometimes like having that, knowing how you know they're going to respond can lead the conversation down the road because all of a sudden you're like, okay, I know this about you. Confirm that, and you take it to the next level.
This is so cool. I'm really enjoying conversing with you.
Oh, good. Me too, Manali.
Okay, so let's move to podcasting now. Mm-hmm. We have video component, which is added to podcasting, and now they're calling it video podcast. So with video content and social media on the forefront, where do you see audio industry heading towards?
Yeah, I mean, I will say I'm a convert on this. I was always an old school podcasting. I love the audio aspect of it. The fact that I have a background in radio I'm pretty solid at editing. I always tell like the clients I produce podcasts for, I always say I can make anything sound good with editing. Video is unforgiving. Mm. So video, it's really difficult to edit screw-ups that without making it seem too obvious. Like when you make an audio edit or when I make an audio edit, there's no way anyone's ever going to know that's there. With a video edit, it's pretty tricky. You can see like, you know, you will see parts, the cutaway, you'll see, it's impossible. You can't do it. There's no, they haven't perfected the video edit where you can't see the edit. So that's one thing. If you, again, this could be just being like an audio nerd and being like, maybe you won't want to see that.
No, I have experienced this. It's very easy to make an audio episode better than it is to make a video episode better.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And here's another trick too. I don't know if you've ever done this, Manali, too. With my clients, when I have them do a podcast with somebody, I will then do an edit and then I'll go back and say, hey, are there any questions you want to redo? Or I'll say, hey, listen, that second question you asked, I think you can ask that better. I will then set up a second recording session, take those questions, put it into the original audio without anyone ever knowing that those questions were redone. Wow. You can't do that with video. Yeah. With video, what you'd have to do is you'd have to put on the same outfit, you have to have the same lighting, and then all of a sudden drop it in. You could still do the edits like we talked about. You would see the actual edit, but you'd have to like recreate the entire environment that you were in. Mm-hmm. And unless you have like a video studio in your home, it's really hard to recreate the lighting unless you know what you're doing. But I will say, here's where I think the video component is very important. And this, again, something I've converted on. I've always been like, oh, audio. But I'm like, video components work really well on social media. Mm-hmm. So anytime you want to share a podcast, promote a podcast, having that 30-second or 1-minute clip from the podcast done via video, I think that's a great tool to use. And I think it's one thing that you're going to see a lot more. I mean, everyone's doing it now, but you're going to see like even folks who are like startup podcasters doing it because they'll see the value in it, that it's the most shareable thing. Like, as you know, people love to share video clips. It's the easiest, you know, outside of pictures, it's the easiest thing to share with other folks. So that's where I lie. So I'm not 100% on posting a totally live podcast, especially if it's virtual. Like, if you are doing a podcast in a studio where two people are sitting down face to face, go for it. Because at that point, it's a TV show. At that point, it's a TV show. It's an easier edit because you can actually do, you know, you can cut from whatever camera you're using. and angles. Yeah, you know the drill. So if you're doing that style of podcast, go for it. Like video till your heart's desire. Put the whole thing on there, unedited, cool. Because people know that in even talk shows for TV, there's going to be screw-ups and stuff like that. So it's pretty normal. But when it comes to these virtual kind of conversations that we're having, I'm more of a fan of just using like the 30-second minute clip, help promote it, and then you're on and gone. I've been slowly but surely, because as you've probably read, you know, YouTube has become a huge podcast search engine. Like people are finding podcasts on YouTube. So what I've been doing is I've been taking those clips that we've been talking about, posting those as sort of video teasers, and then like the 2 or 3 days later, post the audio version with just like a higher, with a graphic, you know, like headliner or something like that. And then have folks listen, because people do listen to podcasts without video on YouTube. It's crazy, but people are doing it. And you just have to go where people are. I mean, that's why TikTok blew up, because people didn't want another social media platform, but everyone saw, was like, oh damn, everyone's there. I got to go there. And I think that's the same thing that's happened with podcasters and YouTube, that you saw the rise of folks like Joe Rogan, who put their whole podcast up video while on YouTube, and the show just exploded. You know, obviously most of the people probably are listening through Spotify or one of the podcast platforms, but just, it's such a great way to, you're almost doing yourself a disservice if you're not doing it. Like if you can't take those few minutes of posting something up on YouTube, you're only hurting yourself, no one else. Like I said, go where the audience is, go where people are. And so that's my take on video. Again, more of a fan of consuming a podcast with audio only. And one of the reasons is, Manali, mm-hmm. is since 2020, we've been stuck in the Zoom world, mm-hmm. where we're all doing these Zoom video calls. Mm-hmm. Who wants to watch another Zoom call? Like, instead of you being on the Zoom call, you're watching a Zoom mm-hmm. call. So that's always been, this could just be my personal thing. I just don't see how many people would sit through watching a Zoom call. I would see, and I'm saying no one would. I'm just saying more people are more likely to want to listen to it as a audio podcast on their favorite podcast apps than they would to be sitting and watching a Zoom call.
Yeah, makes sense. My last question to you before we wrap up. So how do new creators differentiate themselves?
Yeah, I think you start with who your listener should be, like who your listener is, what your community is. Find out who that is first, mm-hmm. Because you know who you are, but you may need to figure out who's going to want to listen to you. Like who, you know, what kind of podcast are you doing and who is it for? So specifically from where I come from, it's business. So I'm doing a podcast for entrepreneurs. But most folks, it may not be so cut and dry or black and white. So find out who that person is. And one thing I always like to say, Manali, and please use this if you'd like, never think of your podcast audience as an audience. Mm. The word audience to me is faceless. It's an amalgamation of things. It's different people from different parts of the world. You can't find any connective tissue with it. I prefer to use the word community.
Wow.
Because a community has a connection. Mm-hmm. An audience doesn't have a connection. Mm-hmm. When people go see a Marvel movie, it's people of all stripes. Mm-hmm. It's young people, old people, whatever color, whatever nationality. And they're huge. They play to a wide audience. Not every podcast is going to play to that wide an audience. So finding that community, knowing who those people are. And when I say community, I'm not saying a community of white people, a community of Indian people. I'm just saying of community of likes. Like, what do those people like? And if you find that, you can connect with them. Another tip, and I think I just tweeted about it today, it drives me crazy. And this is something I learned from radio. Never say, hey, everybody out there. Hey, audience. There's not 100,000 people gathered around a radio or one headphone listening to your podcast. It's one person. So whenever you phrase it like that, I would flip it and say like, hey, for anyone out there, or hey, if you're listening to this, because there aren't people gathered around. This is not the 1940s where families are gathered around a radio listening to something.
Or even TV.
It's one person. Yeah, or even TV. It's one person. And so I feel like that's a great way to connect with that community, is like knowing that singular person that you're speaking to, mm-hmm. in that community. What do they want? What do they expect from you? You know, it's expectations is a huge part of podcasting. What does the audience expect to get out of the podcast? And what do you expect to get out of the podcast? How much time are you supposed to put in the podcast? How much time do you have? You know, the old dreaded pod fade, Manali. You'll see a podcast run for a year and then all of a sudden episodes will stop. Mm-hmm. That's called the pod fade. Mm-hmm. That's because people didn't know what to expect. They didn't know how much time it was going to take, what they were going to get out of it. So if you build expectations for yourself and for your audience, that's where you start when it comes to the podcast. How much time do I have for this podcast? And what does my audience expect? What do people expect to get out of this podcast?
Amazing. Joey, thank you so much. Everyone who's watching, make sure you check out Joey's book, Good Listen. And become good at conversations, because it's not just meant for podcasters and people in the business world, but everyday interactions as well. You have any parting words for everyone who's listening?
Yeah, I mean, I always like to finish every podcast, I say, to follow the golden rule, you know, treat others as you want to be treated. I think especially when it comes to podcasting conversations, it's so much easier to have a conversation when you're nice to each other, you realize, and like, so why can't we people do that outside of a podcast? So as nice as we are to each other here, Manali, why can't we just be nice to everybody outside of this little podcast, little bubble that we're in? It's sort of, yeah, there you go. That's the way I live by. Like I just try to treat everyone nice. And, you know, the podcast is an extension of me. It's like, hey, listen, this is me being nice to a person I'm having a conversation with. But that's how I want to be outside of this little microphone world that we're living in.
Totally. Wise words. Thank you so much. I had a pleasant chat with you, and I look forward to more conversations.
Thank you, Manali. I really appreciate it.